locally, the NFL, the NHL, the MLB, the NBA, I think those are the big four, would absolutely kill to have Formula One's current audience, which is, I think it's what, 40, 41% women.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of the James Allen on F1 podcast brought to you by Autosport. Now, F1 has just held its spectacular season launch at the O2 Arena in London in front of almost 20,000 fans. Tickets for the event sold out in 45 minutes, showing the pull of F1 today. It was a spectacular show, but it also spoke of the new direction of F1 as it grows its appeal among non-traditional fan bases. What better time then to launch the latest Global F1 Fan Survey to hear what the fans have to say about the sport in 2025? Motorsport Network, Autosport's parent company, is carrying out the survey once again in partnership with F1. It launches on Thursday, February the 20th. This is where F1 fans around the world make their voices heard. The last time we did this with F1 in 2021, the survey drew over 167,000 responses from 187 countries. Nielsen certified it as the largest sports survey ever conducted. We've been doing these surveys for many years. The 2017 survey came just after Liberty Media's takeover of F1, and by 2021, we could clearly see the changes among fans, who are younger and more female. So what will this new survey show? Here to discuss with me, we have Rebecca Clancy, Autosport Editor-in-Chief. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, James. Thanks for having me on.
Great to see you. And Chief Motorsport Writer, Ben Hunt. Always a pleasure to see you, Ben, as well.
Hi, James. Thank you.
So let's dive straight in. The last survey in 2021 clearly showed how F1's audiences were getting younger, more female, as I said. And we've seen so much evidence of that since and so much talk about that. What interests me is how F1 has been personalizing its content, using a lot of AI tools, getting much better at social media in the intervening years to really engage with those audiences. So I ask you both, really, Rebecca, maybe you go first. What do you think this new survey will show about the audiences 3 years on?
I think that trend that you mentioned there, James, about younger and more female participation, I think that will continue. I think a lot of the change that we're seeing in Formula One is down to the Netflix documentary Drive to Survive. That has attracted a huge fan base. And as you mentioned, F1 now have quite the job on their hands, as do all of the teams, to try and keep that audience engaged, because we know Drive to Survive comes along every February. It drops its 10 episodes, I think it is. And then F1's job is to keep those people entertained. I think it really helps, obviously, when the sport itself is exciting. And so that will definitely help to keep people engaged, that new fan base that's been coming in since kind of 2018-19, but very much the big wave came with the pandemic when everyone was binge watching it, as we all did, with nothing else to do. So I think definitely we'll see the age of the fans continue to come down. Very much we know F1 are targeting that kind of 18 to 24-year-old range, which is why we have the sprint races now, which I know we'll come on to talk about. And I think we're seeing it on the ground, aren't we, when we go to races. It is much younger. We are seeing more families going, which is lovely, and we are definitely seeing more women attending.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, we did have that initial boost from the Netflix show. But what's been impressive really is how the teams have also helped perpetuate the growth as well. And, you know, that fan engagement, it's a really tricky thing to do. Some teams do it better than others. But of course, that's allowed some, you know, to continue the narrative and develop the characters that people have really come to tune into. And I think it's also the spin-offs, the people creating their own content. F1 has sort of been a bit more relaxed and, you know, allowed people to create stuff and film. And, you know, I think that just all bodes into a much healthier position where there's much more growth across social channels, and that for me is probably going to be the biggest focus of this survey, just to see what becomes of all the social media use.
Yeah, I mean, the average age of F1 fans had dropped to 32 when we did that study in 2021. And what was really interesting to me was the fans who'd been following for fewer than 5 years. In other words, it's the new fans, the discovering of new fans, unlocking those new audiences. It had literally tripled
from 11% of the audience in 2017 to 34% in 2021. Do you expect that trend to have continued as well? Do you think Formula One is still unlocking new audiences?
Yeah, I do from experience going out and talking to people, you know, not going to Silverstone, but going to races abroad, you know, and you speak to them, have you been before? No, this is my first Formula One race. So it's actually encouraging people to go to races and trying things and putting it together with a holiday and getting the first taste of Formula One, which is great, you know. And so I do think that trend will continue.
We're seeing it, aren't we, in America in particular. I always remember when first started going to Austin, for me, that was back in 2017, and you could book a hotel room at a week's notice and you'd never had to have a restaurant reservation. But now it's so popular, you have to book everything months and months in advance. You have to get your flights done a year in advance. You know, you walk into a restaurant now without a reservation and they look at you like you're mad. Like, what are you doing here? How do you really think you're going to be eating here tonight? And that just shows the popularity of the sport and how much it is, in particular growing in the US, which obviously was a target market for them, massively driven by Netflix, as we said. And that is happening kind of everywhere you go. You see it as well in Miami. Silverstone, it's always been a bit tricky to get accommodation for Silverstone, but that has become much harder in recent years as well. And I think that's very much a case of you can see how much F1 is growing and that bodes well for the sport.
Do you think the sport is also looking after its, hesitate to use the word legacy fans? I know in football people hate being called a legacy fan, but people who've been, you know, the diehards, the people who've followed this sport through thick and thin. And let's face it, there has been a lot of thin over the years at various different points. But do you think they still feel enfranchised? Is the balance right there, do you think?
Probably not. But I don't think that's F1's concern. If we're just being crude, I think that they just cater for those, or hope that the racing caters for those people, you know, the fans. 32, you mentioned 32, I feel old. you know, people like me, I guess, you know, we're kind of, the way we're treated is obviously with good racing, and you know, that's kind of our reward. I think that they're obviously focusing on a younger demographic, which makes sense. You know, you look at any other sport and they'd be crying out for those statistics about young female audience. You know, look at golf, you know, look at tennis, you know, they would absolutely love to see an uptick in numbers like that. So Formula One's doing something right, and I just hope that the trend, as we're saying here, we probably, you know, will see it continue, but I, you know, I hope it does.
Well, you are old, Ben. You're a legacy Wimbledon AFC fan, aren't you?
This is it. Football. Absolutely, yes.
I don't know if I fully agree with Ben. I think they do still, to a degree, cater to those fans. And I think they do that by not tweaking with Sundays. So I quite like that Liberty have come in and what they've done, and they're not afraid to experiment with things. They brought in the point for fastest lap, which obviously is now being scrapped. But I like that they're trying it to try and, you know, it gives people more options. The teams more options with strategy, pushing harder, championship fights, going down to the wire. I like that they're doing more stuff around races. I like this idea of it, every race being a Super Bowl. But the one thing they have not even come close to tinkering with is that Sunday race, because they understand that that is the absolute core product that they have and you cannot mess with that. So Fridays, Saturdays, sprints, qualifying, all of that stuff you can mess about with, but you just cannot touch the Sunday. And I think in that regard, they are paying respect and understanding that legacy fan and understanding how important that Sunday main race is.
Apart from Vegas, where it's a Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting, isn't it, that they, you know, that they, there's been so much discussion over the years. I remember when Flavio Briatore came into Formula One in the early 90s, and he was all about lifestyle, and he was all about shortening the Grand Prix. You know, he wanted to have two Grand Prix of 45 minutes with a bit like a football match, you know, with a break in between. And all these things got discussed, like, you know, literally 30 years ago, going into 25. And we still have a 300-kilometer Grand Prix that takes anywhere between 90 minutes and just under 2 hours, depending on the character of the racetrack. And in this day and age, you know, I think it's quite something that they still do it. Having said that, a lot of people don't necessarily sit and watch the whole Grand Prix. And one of the things this survey flags up is how people consume the sport. We're expecting to see a lot more, obviously, people streaming things like F1 TV, but also the highlights, you know, the YouTube highlights that F1 puts out are super popular now. And I know my sons are in their early 20s, and they definitely don't sit and watch a whole Grand Prix very often, even though they love it. They'll be much more across the social media output, much more across the YouTube, but they're still consuming a lot of F1 content. And I get the feeling that a lot of their peers and these new audiences we talk about still do it. So I think you've put your finger on something there, Rebecca. I think that core product is important. But then let's look at, drill down on that a little bit and talk about the actual balance between sport and entertainment. I think a lot of people were concerned with American-owned Liberty Media coming in, wanting to make it more of a show. Last time in the survey, 2021, 58%, so it was a slight majority of fans, said the balance of sport and entertainment was about right. One of the things I'm really looking forward to seeing is whether that number is still as high as that, or whether people think maybe it's gone a bit too far on the entertainment side. I get the feeling some of the younger people perhaps feel that as well, the Gen Zs who just don't like anything that's phony or lacks authenticity. What do you guys think?
I haven't really thought about it really until you mentioned it. And I'm not sure how I feel. I quite like what Formula One's doing. And Beck's totally right saying that they're not messing with the core product, the Sundays. I don't know. Formula One's quite unique, isn't it? It's a business, entertainment and sport. It's three pronged, and I guess it's always been that juggling act, but I don't think necessarily F1 has sort of meddled in those storylines. Netflix may have done, but F1 haven't, so I don't know. I don't know, actually.
I like the spectacle. I mean, I said it. I mean, I don't actually think there's anything wrong with having that balance between sport and entertainment, because you have to keep people engaged.
Yep.
We've all been following this sport long enough to know that there are long periods of time where not a lot is very exciting in Formula One. We have the periods of dominance that we've seen for decades and decades. You know, Mercedes, Red Bull, they're not the first ones to it. We saw it in the early 2000s with Ferrari. Those periods happen, and it's very much F1's job and the team's job. You know, Ben mentioned it earlier, some of the teams are doing a fantastic job with their social media. They have to keep those fans engaged. And so when you go to a track, you spend the weekend there. You know, you mentioned it, James, just under 2 hours of racing on a Sunday. What else are they doing? How else do you keep them entertained? And so they've brought in these fan stages, and they get the drivers up there and the team principals, and they're always doing events. And I actually think that's a really good thing, because it's not cheap to follow Formula One. It's certainly not cheap to go to a race. And actually, when you go somewhere like Silverstone, for example, you sort of do feel like you're getting your money's worth, because they're putting so much effort into the show around the main show. And actually, I think that's to be applauded. I think more places, more tracks could probably do with that side of entertainment. And I think actually the fans who do then go get rewarded for, well, if you're at Silverstone, probably sitting through the rain. And fair play to you, you're probably a fairly hardcore fan, and camping out. And I mean, the campsites are brilliant. But I think there's nothing wrong with people talk about sport and entertainment as if they can't. Yeah. Be bedfellows. And I don't think that's the right approach. I think more sports could actually learn quite a lot from Formula One and what they've done in Liberty. And I said it earlier, I really like how they've come in and tried to really build up the show and make it something else, because it's not always exciting racing. We've got lucky again this season. You know, after 2021, I'm not sure many of us thought we would get this close to season so soon after. Definitely none of us thought that at the start of the year. So you know, I think it's great. I think they should be applauded for it. And I hope people feel like they've got the balance right, but I don't feel like we should talk about it as if it's a dirty thing that sport and entertainment are linked.
Yeah, I guess that's probably why I struggled with the initial question, because F1 have always made it clear that they want to make the drivers the stars and the heroes and build them up as profiles. And that's exactly what they're doing. And I think for me, it's always about giving back to the fans. And Silverstone is a great example of added value. You know, tickets are expensive, but you've got the concert, you've got lots of fan stages and lots of engagement. And I think that the way that sporting events are these days, it's no longer acceptable just for people to pay money, turn up and see the show and that's it. There's actually extras that could be built into the day, whether it's, you know, a concert or, you know, a driver parade or whatever it is. It's about adding value and making the fan or customer or whichever you want to call them feel valued and make them want to come back. And of course, it's all about engagement and just, you know, putting on a better show. And Silverstone is a good example because they've always struggled, you know, with that balancing act of paying for the race and, you know, the investment and the cost of putting on the concerts, etc. But it's kind of forced other races to do more. You know, I used to think that Spa was, you know, I was very critical of Spa with the lack of facilities and options for fans when there wasn't on-track action, whereas now they've got a fan zone and it's good to see that everyone's sort of upping their game and just giving more added value to fans.
Yeah, the highlight is no longer just the chips and mayonnaise. There's other things to get excited
yes,
about.
Exactly.
Well, you mentioned personalities. So let's talk a bit about personalities, because that is so much of what F1 is about, correctly. Always was in my book, but I guess the sport wasn't perhaps making enough of it, of that. Last time out in the study, Max Verstappen came out as the most popular driver. Bear in mind, this was the autumn of 2021. With Lando Norris second behind him. But Lando was number one with female fans. And Dan Ricciardo also scored very highly with US audiences. He's gone now. But what do you think we'll see this time? Who do you think the most popular driver is going to be?
I definitely don't think it'll be Max Verstappen this time around. I think Lando probably has a good shout at being number one. I thought Verstappen being number one back in 21 was interesting anyway. As you say, it was in the autumn, so before that finale. Let's not go there, because we could have a whole other podcast on that, podcast series probably. But I suspect Lando Norris is incredibly popular. We know he's incredibly popular. We can see that the huge numbers in his social media following is just growing, getting bigger. He is one of those drivers who is very good at engaging with his fans as well. We know a lot of the drivers, Verstappen, Norris, they all do their sim racing. Norris has his own Twitch account where he goes racing and the fans can follow him. He's obviously got all his own merchandise now. So I would fully expect Lando, I'm probably going to eat my words now, but I would expect Norris to be number one.
I would agree. You know, I think that of the social platforms, he is the king of them. You know, Lewis may have more followers, but they probably tend to be older people like me, whereas the young fans are following Lando and seeing what he's up to. And I guess, you know, him and a lot of these exciting young drivers coming in as well. I think that for me, again, the survey will be interesting just to see the swell of support for Colapinto. We talk about, you know, all the fans going to see him in Brazil last weekend. Let's just actually see what the numbers say and whether indeed people are following him.
I'm expecting a few fans to write in Leclerc's dog, Leo, I think, as well. I think he'll, I'm sure he's going to feature somewhere, even though there won't be a question about him.
I'm definitely a fan of the dog.
The dog rocks. Sprint races, you mentioned it earlier, Rebecca. Let's talk about that, because they had a mixed reception 3 years ago in the last study. There were only three sprint races weekends back then. Fans very clearly said they didn't want to see them every round. That is a route, however, that MotoGP went down from 2023 onwards. You could argue that they've got more space for it because their races are half the distance, half the time of a Formula One race. They tend to be a bit frantic in MotoGP, and there's been a lot of accidents with them. But nevertheless, it gives obviously double the racing content. But in F1, we now have six sprint weekends. How do you feel that's gone? How do you feel it plays with the audiences? And what do you think people are going to say this time around as to whether they would like to see more sprint?
I have real mixed feelings about the sprint race. So on paper, the first third of a race with no need for strategy because you don't have to pit during a sprint, it's fundamentally quite boring. Once you've done the first couple of laps and got those out of the way, it's a kind of tends to be a procession. The other issue we have with the sprint race is that the other teams learn far too much about their competitors, what the main event on the Sunday will be like, the main race on the Sunday will be like. They can, you know, they learn a lot about the tyres, about potential strategies, and they're almost going into Sunday with too much information. However, every single time we have a sprint race, something incredible happens over the weekend, not necessarily during the sprint, but maybe the main race, or there is always, always drama on a sprint weekend. So I have real mixed feelings. I am definitely in the camp of less practice is better for everyone. I would scrap practice altogether if it was me. Maybe just give them half an hour and then get going. So because it always leads, the more unknowns you have going into a race, the more exciting it will always be. So I'm definitely still conflicted on the sprint. I don't have an answer either way.
I think you must have been being able to read my notes that I've got here, because I love the sprint races for the fact that they just throw up jeopardy, and I can't stand practice. You know, I've always struggled with watching those sessions and I just don't see the point. There's far too much practice. I get the fact that there's cars going around and people enjoy that. I do. But I love the fact that we have one practice session and then into qualifying or sprint qualifying. And of course, it puts teams on the back foot. They've got to get everything ready, prepared in one session. And I think that, for me, that hurried approach is fantastic because it does lead to mistakes with setup. These cars aren't perfect by any means when they get to the race, even on Sunday, because of the lack of testing that they've done on them or practice they've done on them. So I really enjoy it. And it always, you know, as Beck says, it always throws up something. And I enjoy it for that aspect. I enjoy the MotoGP sprint races too. You know, I like the chaos and, you know, they're fast and frenetic races. And I just think that that's awesome. The more races, the better, in my opinion.
Another topic we're going to be asking about, Rebecca, is female participation. And specifically, there'll be questions about the F1 Academy that it didn't exist back in 2021. How do you think that series has cut through with the wider F1 audiences and how has it been received?
Well, I mean, we had W Series back then, which obviously was the predecessor to F1 Academy and almost, I would say, the inspiration for F1 Academy. I think with the first season being behind closed doors, just to get a feel for make sure how they're doing it, and that was probably the right thing to do. But now they race at F1 races, which is brilliant. And I think one of the reasons, other than obviously the visibility, is just getting that understanding that no one cares if you're male, female, whatever. Once the helmet is on, you're a racing driver. And that's all you care about is racing. I remember going to the finale of W Series in the inaugural year at Brands Hatch, and all of the kids who were there, boys, little girls, all they cared about was talking to the racing drivers. They didn't care that they were women. They just wanted to see fun racing. And they were like, wow, these people, they go racing, driving cars really fast. And that was quite amazing for me to see. And then I think now with F1 Academy having such a high profile, Susie Wolf at the helm, obviously incredibly experienced racing driver herself, a great appointment on that side, I think, because she's obviously incredibly smart. She has all the connections within the paddock. She absolutely knows about racing. And I think she's done a brilliant job with F1 Academy as well. And I think it is starting to cut through. The thing I always say about F1 Academy is I don't actually think it will necessarily find the next F1 racing, female racing driver, but I think it will absolutely inspire.
100%. Yeah, I 100% agree with you. You know, talking to Hannah in our office, Rebecca, yesterday about the F1 Academy, and she
this
absolutely
is our
loves
work
it.
Experience girl with us at the moment who's very keen to get into and F1.
It was just fascinating to see her enthusiasm for that championship and, you know, real genuine passion and following it. And, you know, that's great. You know, that's telling you that it is working and people are engaging. The other element I would say about this as well is that Netflix are doing a fly on the wall documentary series following around the series. So I think that will be crucial to seeing how well that does as well.
Yeah, creating those reasons to care is so important, isn't it? So let's get another perspective from someone over in the US who represents a lot of what the new audiences are about. We caught up with tech and F1 commentator Tony Cowan-Brown. Well, Tony, welcome, first of all, to the podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
The last survey in 2021 spelled out how Formula One had doubled its female audience since Liberty Media took over. What do you think this new survey is going to show?
Oh, hopefully the same upwards trend. But I will say this, it's been fascinating being a Brit in America and telling Americans that the big four, basically the NFL, the NHL, the MLB, the NBA, I think those are the big four, would absolutely kill to have Formula One's current audience, which is, I think it's what, 40, 41% women, global in nature. Is it still 32 years average?
Yeah.
Years of average age. And obviously the latest stat also of just like 99% of these fans are experiencing everything digital. And I think any other sport would look at this audience and go, yep, we'll have that demographic. Thank you very much. So I think we're probably going to still see a lot of those trends. I do have a sneaky feeling that I don't think it's probably gone up that much in terms of the female audience. I don't think the age demographic has gone down that much. But I think it's probably trending in the right direction. The right direction being younger and more female, from my perspective.
Now, the last time a majority, I think it was 58% of fans, said that the balance of sport and entertainment was right.
Some people think it's gone too far towards the entertainment side, especially quite a lot of sort of Gen Zs who feel perhaps it's lost a little bit of authenticity. What's your view?
I think a big part of that is obviously we now have our three races in America. And if there's one thing that America knows how to do is mirror, or not even mirror, just bring together entertainment and sports. I think there's something now for everyone. I think it's one of these worlds in which if you don't want the entertainment, you can show up. If you're going IRL, if you're going and watching and experiencing a race live, you can show up and just enjoy the race and then exit and leave. If you want to sit down, which is very much what my father does, and just watch the 2-hour live broadcast with Brundle and Crofty and enjoy the live race and then tune off, and not hear anything else, you can do that. But then there's all of these other things that if you want more entertainment, it's there for up for grabs. If you want to go to a race and you're, and look, I think James also, if we look at the price of tickets, and I know that was a big thing also in the survey from 2021, was just how expensive things were starting to look. And I think that's definitely trended upwards since 2021. Mm. And I think it's going to be interesting. The survey respondents will probably say, yes, ticket prices are way too expensive as it stands right now. But you are getting a lot more bang for your buck, for lack of a better word. You are getting a full 3-day experience. And I think the promoters have done, and if you look at somewhere like Austin, Bobby Epstein has done an incredible job that once, you know, you have bums in seats and you have people at the track, they have all of these incredible options at their disposal. They have an incredible live concert, lots of food and beverages options. And we're seeing also what's on offer in terms of tickets and opportunities. You can now do just one day food and beverage, one day in entertainment, one day without entertainment. So there's all of these trends that are happening that I just think is offering more for the more diverse fans that we're getting. And I think that, again, is very much, you know, tied to the trend of maybe a younger demographic, a more female demographic who want to enjoy sports in a different way. So I think all of this is positive. I do think there is something to be said of not losing the essence. And I actually think that's happening more online, digital, with the media. The media is definitely chasing, in my opinion, my very humble opinion, is definitely more chasing maybe the more clickbait, the rage bait news articles and titles. And we know why. I mean, the business of media has also radically changed. We need those clicks. We need those views. And as a society, there's nothing that gets us clicking an article faster than if we don't agree with the title of that article. So I just think the whole media landscape has shifted so drastically that has meant that we have all of these new components. But I think we're still in a fine balance of entertainment and sports. And I do generally think if you just want the sports, you can get just the sports. So many people still do that.
Yeah, I mean, there is a section of the survey every time about media consumption that shows quite interesting trends. You know, pay TV up to about 50% of the sample last time, a big drop off in free-to-air TV due to the lack of availability of it really around the world, although there has been a little bit of a reaction to that in some countries. But I guess what I'd love to ask you, especially with you know how you engage in Formula One and how you're followed as an influencer and what have you, what's your read on the social media platforms? I mean, we had 40% of fans last time on Twitter. It was the largest social media platform in the 21 survey. And we sort of saw a big growth on Instagram, but it still wasn't on that level. The YouTube highlights were becoming more popular. I get the sense that that's really exploded in the last 3 years. But what's your read generally on the social media landscape now?
It's interesting that you bring up YouTube highlights, because I was talking with someone from YouTube not that long ago, and they were saying that some of the most popular pieces of content, specifically with regards to Formula One, had very little to do with the on-track battles or on-track footage. It was very much getting an understanding of the drivers and these fun and entertaining conversations that the drivers were having off track and what was happening, I think, tied more to a driver personality. There's something that's happening for me. And I'll use that example of just how my dad consumes Formula One and how I consume Formula One. I think we're shifting a little bit away from, and again, this has to do with everything that we've just spoken about and this diversity of the media landscape, but we've shifted so far away, in my opinion, from F1 fans sitting down and needing to consume the race live, those 2 hours, and then calling it quits. What we're actually seeing is these younger fans are consuming sometimes 6 to 8 hours of Formula One content, but it's in the form of highlights. They may be watching the race live, but they're also live tweeting. They're on threads. They may be doing a live reaction TikTok video. Some of them are actually live streaming, although they can't obviously stream the race for all of the broadcasts. rights that we know are very, very stringent and strict in Formula One. But the way people are consuming is so different, and it's kind of like this Frankenstein model, that no two people are consuming Formula One in the same way. And I'm one of those people that I try and watch it live. Am I watching all of the other shows that F1 TV has on offer? Probably not, but I'm definitely still consuming 6 hours of Formula One a day. And that's, you know, going to websites like Autosport, going to Motorsport, watching what's happening on Threads, watching reactions of people on TikTok or Instagram. And so I think there's something there that's really interesting, that I don't believe Formula One, or actually even sports as a whole, has caught up with, is that the way that people are consuming your sports has changed drastically and is still going to change. And that also means that the definition of what a diehard fan or a, you know, a very serious Formula One fan looks like is completely different. You would look at my dad and think, oh, he must be a very serious Formula One fan. He's okay with consuming an hour and 45 minutes of Formula One every week, every 2 weeks, and calling it quits. Someone like me wants to dig further, and I appreciate whether it's, you know, other people, the number of podcasts that's boomed in the last 10 years and YouTube channels. If I have a question, I want to dive into it. So I think that for me has been really interesting, is watching the nature of sports consumption, of sports consumption, and just how proactive it is, engaging it is. It's no longer passive. There's a real desire to get to understand the sport, or get to show your love for your favorite team or your favorite driver, which I feel like back in the 80s or 90s, which is probably what I remember the most, the 90s and the early 2000s, was more of a passive or more silent fandom. Whereas today's fandoms is very, very vocal. It's not all rosy, it's not all perfect, but it's very interesting to see how that shifted. And it's very interesting to see, I think, how all sports series are trying to catch up and understand truly how people are engaging with their sports.
Yeah, I think depth of fandom and the nature of that, yes, the touch points with the sport, those are things that are definitely going to be looked at very closely in this survey. It'd be very, very interesting to see the answers when they're revealed. Finally, though, Tony, and thanks again for your time. What, in your view, is F1 getting right and not getting right today?
Oh, brilliant question. I've been stuck on this stat for a long time. And it was a stat that came out of Salesforce obviously being one of the big Formula One sponsors, that said that 1% of Formula One fans will attend a race in a given season. I don't know how true this is going to continue to be. But if it is, that means that this is a sport where 99% of your fans are engaging with you digitally and remotely. And so I would say one thing that both F1 has gotten right, but not quite right, is the digital product on offer, F1 TV. Anyone who asks me if this is a good product, I will put my hands in the air and go, absolutely is a phenomenal, phenomenal product. The archive, all the shows, everything that's there is incredible. One thing F1 hasn't gotten right with regards to that is actually convert the new fans that came in post-pandemic, whether that was through the social media landscape, whether that was through Drive to Survive, whether whatever route they came in through, they haven't actually been able to convert these people and these fans into paying F1 TV subscribers. And I think that is something that maybe F1 has struggled to get right, probably because they put all their eggs in the same basket of Drive to Survive will convert these naturally, which is not true. The route is a much more complicated. So I think that is both simultaneously something that it's gotten both right and wrong. And I also think it's truly understanding the demographic that we have at our disposal and understanding what people want and the price point that they're willing to pay. It's not enough to throw more in the bag of entertainment. The product, the Formula One product, in my opinion, is incredibly good, whether you watch it live or digitally. I think it's everything that we just spoke about, James. It's truly understanding how people are engaging with your sport and mirroring that in the products that you put on offer. And I think F1 has still yet to completely understand who this new demographic is, which I guess is why you're doing a survey like this one, is to help Formula One understand truly this new demographic. And I think that demographic is also still trying to figure out what they want. It's always interesting to ask people, what are you unhappy with? What do you want more of? And some people are still scratching their face, and it's hard, you know, scratching their head, and it's hard to pinpoint exactly what would make the perfect F1 race weekend.
Well, that's what we're hoping to find out. Tony, thank you so much, as always, for your time. Great to see you.
Thanks, James. Thanks for having me.
Rebecca, Ben, let me ask you the same question. What, in your opinion, is F1 getting right and not getting right?
I think what they're getting right for me is the show, the kind of making it big and bold and more exciting for fans as a whole, not just necessarily the on track when you're at the race. I mean, obviously, I think I enjoy that they are experimenting with things. I like that they've introduced the sprint. I like that they introduced the fastest lap point. I don't like that they're taking it away because I think actually it does create jeopardy. I think obviously they did so. They decided to take it away after Danny Ric went for fastest lap. And there's all, obviously, again, for another podcast, the conversation between Red Bull and RB and the sister team, junior team, second team, which is obviously all a bit controversial. But I like that they're having a bit of an experiment with it, not touching that Sunday product, as I mentioned. I feel a little bit like we tweak the regulations too much. So by absolute, you know, the rules of physics, the gap will close as the regulations stay the same because, you know, the diminishing rate of return on how well you can do, Red Bull will naturally be caught. And then we know that next year is the final year of these regulations and 26, we're just blowing it all up and starting again, new engines, which it's obviously very important, you know, sustainable fuels. We're getting a new car manufacturers because like with Audi, because they really like the way that F1 is going and they can transfer a lot of that back to the road cars. But I don't like how often we change the regulations. I feel a little bit like they could be more stable. I do think we tweak a bit too much.
Yeah, I agree. Getting right, I've put on my list here, trying new things, and obviously the social engagement and just being bold, I think, is something that I really do applaud the way that Liberty have been with Formula One. In terms of getting things wrong, and it's not really their fault, but I think it's the FIA. That's the biggest problem that F1 have at the moment. And decision-making, slow decision-making. You know, how is it that we've still got a situation where people are consuming a race, whichever way they do it, whether it was on social or actually in person or on TV, and yet it finishes and then 3 hours later we have a decision on, you know, an incident in the race which changes the complexion of the result. And I think that's the biggest problem. We need quicker decision making. We need it to be less complicated if we're ever to attract more fans, in my opinion. And also just generally the output. I think the world feed could be tweaked to try and be more encompassing, to take in a newer audience. You know, not everyone's an expert.
Well, thank you for that. The results will be released in the new year. And it's certainly going to be very, very interesting. Remember, you can send in your questions to us at James Allen on F1 on Twitter. Or X. We got one from Damien Kay just before we go on X about the engine cost cap breach by Honda and Alpine, which both were fined for. He says, I thought Honda had left F1, or is this just Red Bull Racing breaching the cost cap by another name? Which one of you wants to clear that one up?
I mean, look, Honda aren't leaving, are they? They're obviously going to Aston Martin, but it is a consequence. They're the ones that have been implicated in this. And I think that had it been Red Bull, I think that they would be very keen to shove that back onto Red Bull's door and say, look, they're the ones responsible for it. So, you know, they've accepted it. They've moved on.
Well, we'll wrap it up there. Please make sure to make your voice heard by completing the Global F1 Fan Survey. You can find the link in the episode description notes. Remember to send in your questions and observations to @JamesAllen on F1 on Twitter or X. My thanks to Rebecca, to Ben and to Tony. You can read all of Ben's insightful F1 stories on Autosport Online or via the app, and you'll find Tony on her Instagram, Tony Cowan Brown. My thanks to Dre, Matt and Jason on production, and thanks to you for listening. Please click to follow or subscribe, leave us a review and a rating, and tell all your F1 mad friends about us. Share it with one of them today. We'll be back with another one very soon.